sun in the sky and the moon at night. It's Elaine with Shine on Rise FM Mid Mornings. My name is Mpumi Mbete. You're on Rise FM Mid Mornings, and I'm so excited. Kugcwele Timbokotfo namhla e-studio. Hey, hi Timbokotfo nje. Ngisho Timbokotfo tema-CV. Yeah, ngabe ngicoca nato. And I did mention that we'll be having this conversation with our friends from the University of Mpumalanga.
Celebrating Africa Day with Rise FM and the University of Mpumalanga, an African university leading in creating opportunities for sustainable development through innovation. Hashtag, I love my Africa.
You, of course, can be a part of this conversation using that hashtag, I love my Africa. In studio with me this morning, I have Dr. Sfiso Wagandlovu, who's a political studies lecturer. I've also got Ms. Thulisile Buda, who's a culture and heritage lecturer at the University of Mpumalanga. I also have on the line with me Prof. Sichaba Mahlomaholo, who's a research professor of education. And, of course, you're with me, Mpumi Mbete. Good morning, ladies. Ngicalengani. Welcome to Rise of FM. All right, I'm gonna come to Angcalenga Prof, who's on the line. Ngiyati kunento lefuna silungise. Modernity tells us, hey, women for ladies first, but sindvu sithi chube maja embili. I'll explain why. So I'm gonna start with Prof. Good morning, Prof.
Good morning, ma'am, for me.
Prof, are you with? Yes, we can hear you nicely.
Thank you.
Professor, we are yet in Zabayam Lenkulma. I would see Sindhu City men first.
Yes, I heard what you said, but I'm not sure if I'm agreeing with you. Because as Africans, we are the most advanced in terms of respect for women.
I'm going to justify this because I actually stand by it when it was explained. But let me first start again with greeting the ladies. Good morning, Ms. Thulisile. Welcome once again to Rise FM.
Good morning, Pumi, and thank you very much for having me.
And welcome to you too, Dr. Sfiso. It's such a pleasure to have you this morning.
Good morning, Pumi. Nice to be here.
All right. Before I need to obviously explain myself. I visited a cultural heritage site, and they had the rendezvous, and they were explaining even how they are built, that because of the structure of the door and having to bend to go in, the men were expected to go in first in case there was something. Mm-hmm. With that explanation, is it justified? Prof. Ngcalengao.
Well, ma'am, personally, I don't think it could be seen as a cultural thing. Uh-huh. It's a practice for that particular moment.
Truly?
Well, I think it's because men are expected, or according to our cultural beliefs and customs and customary laws, men are supposed to lead women. So even if there is war, women will always be left behind. There will always be a man up front, and the men at last, and middle, it will be women, because that's how women, I mean, that's how men in Africa protect women. They lead first so that they can be able to dictate any danger. And then ke bavikele abantu bengubo. So it's our cultural practice ukuthi amadoda aya ngaphambili mandanzi.
We are like Prof. Mahlomaholo. You know, we touch on whether it's cultural heritage, history, so many conflicting theories, and then enter the space of politics. I want to come to you, Dr. Sfiso. Yes. How do we, in the world that we live in today, celebrate this diversity while showcasing our Africanness with the political, current political state?
Okay. Thank you, Mpumi. I believe we celebrate this diversity by, first of all, taking as a point of departure that Africa is central to itself and to the rest of the world. And it shares this history of colonization, which actually shaped our political identities and the broader African context. And as the diverse people of Africa. We take that as a departure point to affirm ourselves, to define the future that is wanted by us as that diverse people of Africa who shares experiences and particularly the history of colonialism, which we all share. And it is a very important history in the sense that it shaped our political identities in particular.
I love that you go there, Dr. Sfiso, because it not only shaped our political history, it also shaped our education. I'm coming to you, Professor. How then do we celebrate an education system that many argue is very colonial in how it was set up? I mean, the buzzword was decolonizing education. So how do we celebrate African diversity through education?
Thank you very much, Mpumi. We celebrate celebrate Africanness in education by privileging, by making more visible the practices of excellence that come from the African continent. There are so many achievements that people of Africa have made in terms of better educational practices, in terms of discoveries in the sciences, in terms of discoveries in the human and the social sciences. So through education, we try to put them to the fore so that we can become aware that, like any other people, we really have been making this significant strides in every facet of human endeavor. So the month, the day, the 25th, it's on that day that we emphasize that to show that throughout the years, Africa has been a force to reckon with.
We really want to compete on the global stage, and yet there are things that obviously have set the continent behind. But while we're still on the issue of education, I want to bring in language to this conversation. We in South Africa have 11 official languages, but Africa as a whole has easily between 1,500 to 2,000 languages. Well, with Arabic being the most widely spoken, followed by English and the likes of French. So where do we even begin decolonizing education, rewriting our political history, when language itself, which can either unify or, divide us, is also lagging in terms of not only documenting, but preserving and promoting and developing our indigenous languages? Ms. Tula.
You know, Mpumi, we start from where we are. Most people will even ask, how do we start decolonizing, the education? I mean, when we speak of education, people, they think it's only about the language, which is also about the content that is taught to our people, that is foreign to our people. So language is a very small aspect when it comes to decolonization. We're talking about transforming the curriculum. And when we decolonize, it doesn't mean that we move away from Western ways of knowing. It means that we are saying that who we are and everything that makes us African should be part of the curriculum. A child who is Ndebele learning, using isiNdebele language and learning about amaNdebele culture, that knowledge has to be part of the curriculum. Some aspects of who we are have to be featured in different subjects. So if we have scientific knowledge or we have mathematics that is used at home, such as beadwork and mural art that reflects symmetrical geometry, yamaNdebele, we are saying it should be part of the curriculum. Children should learn ukuthi geometry is at home. Ugogo uyakwazi ukugwala nokuphothela triangles, rectangles, and other shapes. We see them in our walls. We see them in our beaded attires. Therefore, when a teacher teaches you about mathematics, that's when you can say, my grandmother does this. I know this from home. I can relate to this. So we are saying our cultural background should be part of the curriculum. Of course, we can never speak of African culture without language. When we speak of who we are, if right now ngikubuza ukuthi umbethe ngubani, you can never define who you are in English. Kodwa ungazihlathulula ngeSwati. So that is why we saying ukuthi we decolonize not only the language but also the content to say who we are matters. Our people existed before colonialism. Africa was never in Stone Age. Africa was had its own civilization before colonialism. We have abundant of evidence. We have our monuments, our crafts in Europe and in other our Western countries, proving our early civilization.
I'm going to get into some of that because the history shapes the political history. But if we are to get the next generation, then the research in terms of education comes in, and how do we restructure it as you propose? I'm in conversation with some leading academics from the University of Mpumalanga. It's our Africa Day lecture in partnership with the university. And on the line, I've got Professor Setshaba Mahlomahulu. In studio, I've got Ms. Thulisile Buda and Dr. Sifiso Ndlovu. This conversation continues on Rise FM mid-morning. And so do the celebrations of our Africa Day in terms of music. That's Soti Soul with Insecure on Rise FM mid-mornings. You are listening to Mpumimbete. It's our Africa Day celebration, and we have an Africa Day lecturer right in studio. It's a partnership with the University of Mpumalanga. Speaking of which, I've got on the line Prof. Setshaba Mahlomahulu, who's a research professor of education, and Ms. Thulisile Buda in studio with me. She is a culture and heritage lecturer at the University of Mpumalanga. Also with us is Dr. Sifiso Wagandlovu. I should have probably started by Mam Kase. No, you will just say Sawubona.
Oh.
Yeah. It's interesting. We're having this conversation in English. It would have been nice to actually have it in indigenous languages. Just before that song, Thuli was talking about decolonizing education. And yet the politics as we know it is also from that same structure of what we were taught, whether it's the history we were taught. And as I grow up, I understand the history that we were not taught also has a lot to do with our level of tolerance or intolerance towards each other. How would we go about tackling that space in terms of politics, political education? Because ute we can't go forward singazazi nokuthi singabobani sibuyapi.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Mpumi. And you just said something interesting that we are even having this conversation in English. But I know how to say Sawubona.
Yeah.
Yes. Picking up from what my colleague Uthuli said before we went for break about decolonization of decolonizing the curriculum, decolonizing education, which at the present moment I am privileged to teach at a university like Mpumalanga, which has set itself as an African university. Because what we have currently, I would argue vehemently that we have universities in Africa,
yeah,
but not African universities.
Awful.
And I myself, being a product of these universities or on Africa, I believe I have a central role to play in being part of the efforts and struggles. It's a struggle to decolonize education because it starts from relearning what we learned. It starts from relearning what we learned. For instance, I will speak about the theft of history, whereby Africa has been portrayed as a continent without history. And normally when we speak of Africa and what the curriculum we were all fed was mainly borders around the history of Africa beginning from colonization.
Yeah.
Because in Eurocentric terms, Africa has been portrayed as people without history, people without knowledge, and all that kind of stuff. But a day like Africa Day, where diverse people of the African continent remember their Africanness,
mm-hmm.
it is very vital that we become conscious of theft of history also as the starting point.
And that takes me to Prof on the line, because if there was theft, what is research telling us in terms of education, Prof? Because what informs the research and where we focus it, so that we begin to unlearning certain things that we were taught, or relearning our ways, indigenous ways and ways of being?
Thank you very much, Mpumi. I think you're really touching on very important points as far as the decolonization project or Africanization project is concerned, because knowledge that was generated in Africa is buried very deep down in terms of history by layers upon layers of Eurocentric ways of knowing and ways of learning. For example, immediately somebody thinks about research, what do they think about? They think about where you have the researcher as the most important person. They're thinking of the researcher as these people who do not know anything about research. They're thinking about a researcher using instruments, questionnaires, things like interview schedules and so on. But my thinking, and then what has come to the fore now of late, is that there are methods of doing research that come from that originate from the African continent. Let me make an example of the concept of, let's say, I'm sure even in Isiswati we have a similar concept of let's say, where it's about participation, a democratic way of conducting research. In the same as our parents and our communities come together to solve real problems in the communities, that what drives the research is not so much the status of the people involved, but about the people coming together.
I'm going to ask you to just hold the line for me. It's breaking there for us. We're going to try and get you back. But yo, I think Professor Mahlomaholu Nagatsinta, the context in which even the methodology that is applied to conduct research,
exactly.
As if what you're saying, there weren't ways abogogo before. Sifikela, I'm thinking nagathing eswat kunetingundla kunesibaya bekunetindlela kunengabisa kunemhlanga. Obviously during these gatherings there's info and data that is lost because of our lack of documenting.
Yes.
History documenting tindlela tethu tekuphila. Ngicela ungene kuleyo ukuthi if we are truly to celebrate and pass on this information to the next generation, ilahleke le history le Dr. Fisa khuluma ngekuthi yantshontshwa, yantshontshwa ngoba bekungekho tindzawo la gogo nasashonile uhambe nalo lonke lwati nema recipe.
Yes.
Senda njani?
And you know, Mpumi, it's a very valid point by Prof, because when we speak of decolonization, we're speaking of basic education, right? Subjects. Then we speak of higher education on how researchers conduct research with indigenous people. Most of the time when research is conducted about indigenous knowledge, who we are, our culture, people use Western methods of conducting research. They end up making our people feel intimidated or feel guti what they are saying is not the truth, or it's a myth, or it's barbaric, or it's old fashioned. Making our people not even open up about who they are. Because if you were to tell someone from who's a Western scholar about your worldviews, Uguti, this is your belief system, they will see it as barbaric or non-existent. Uguti, what is this? So they impose who they are on you. And hence why our people are unable to share their knowledge with outsiders. Hence why when we're saying we are decolonizing research, we are saying African people should write and represent their own. African people should be at the center of research. We should
state that we are indigenous scholars who conduct indigenous research about our own, and therefore we understand customary laws, cultural protocols. We are part of the community, and because we conduct research with, not about, our people, knowledge holders become the most important aspect of research. Knowledge holders are now participants and not subjects of research. We are learning from Abokoko. We are not there as officials and wearing our doctoral regalias. We are there as children, and they are the knowledge holders, and they are transmitting this knowledge to us, and we are there. Siyazithoba, you know, siyazithoba ra ikokobetsa gore re kopa the knowledge that you have, share it with us. And because of how we do things, because we want to participate also as indigenous researchers, we participate in all activities of our participants. If they are telling us, Uti, it's 12 midnight, we have to pray to the gods of the sea. We pray, we participate because we want to understand the knowledge of the gods of the sea. We don't say this is witchcraft. We don't say this is barbaric. We don't say, Uti, there is only one God according to me. We don't impose our own worldviews, and therefore they are able, Uti, they share their knowledge with us. Our Koko, they are able to transmit this knowledge freely because we participate. We understand that they are the knowledge holders, and Tina, we are just children learning this knowledge and trying to document it.
It's interesting because we are going back to Dindlela. Yathi sihlasele iCorona kwavumbuka imihlonyane ngalana ngalana kwabuda ukuthi bogogo bebenda njani. We're going to try and get the prof back on the line with us, Zahara Utsiloliwe, and then we continue this conversation celebrating Africa Day with our Africa Day lecture with our academics from the University of Mpumalanga. That's Zahara with Loli. We're on Rise FM mid-mornings. I'm going to quickly ngindlulise na titolo ngoba ngemva lokho iyaqhubeka iconversation yetfu lana ne dihambi tetfu dikhuluma tetfu vash tetfu dalomuhla lechamuka lapha eNyuvesi yaseMpumalanga. Iyuvesi yekucala kusosifunda saseMpumalanga uthe Dr. Sfiso. So there have been many universities in Africa, but Mpumalanga has a university of Africa. Ngabe ngimparaphrase kahle. This conversation continues on mid-mornings with myself. Rise of Her mid-mornings. My name is Mpumi Mbete. It's 20 to 11. Oh man, time flies, they say. Well, I've got on the line Professor Mahlomahulu. And coming to you, Professor, we were just having a conversation about collaboration in terms of research and in that space. I'm going to come to Dr. Sfiso shortly, but the concern is, you know, the people who conduct the research are not always the policy implementers. Is there conversation happening that leads to action in terms of the decision makers with all the findings? I mean, we can research until we blue in the face, but if we don't see transformation in terms of these research documents being implemented, are we really going forward?
Yes, my response to that, Mpumi, is that we definitely are going forward. In the sense that researchers work together with policymakers. The problem might just be that sometimes change is not immediate, it takes time. So we were talking about the research methodology, the decolonized methodologies of doing research, which are finding their way now into the mainstream ways of conducting research and generating information. So there are many avenues for collaborating and working together with the department. For example, one of the things that I wanted to refer to in terms of school education is that the use of mother tongue has now become institutionalized because of the research and the collaboration between the researchers and the Department of Education. For example, we are moving to a stage where even at grade 12, there's going to be a choice between writing your chemistry or whatever discipline in your particular language because of massive amount of research that has demonstrated that when children learn in their own African languages, they tend to perform even better than when they are learning and writing an exam in a different language. In higher education, we have standards that are developed now where the department is insisting that our curriculum should demonstrate the Africanness, especially for an institution like our own, which has Africanization in its midst. The University of Mpumalanga is one of the leading universities that talks about our university being in Africa and its curriculum demonstrating, showing that characteristics of being an African university. So over and above it being a slogan, it's being infused in every subject, in every discipline that we teach. For example, today there will be opportunities, for example, in my faculty, where colleagues will be showing how they design lessons with an African philosophy and orientation in mind, how they set out outcome, facilitate and assess in line with the African thinking at the center of our thinking. So this suffuses everything that we do across the board. So yes, in terms of collaborating with the department, with policymakers, we definitely are going there. It's going to take some time, but definitely it's on the cards.
Dr. Fiso, touching on what the prof is talking about, in terms of African politics, if only the continent was isolated, but we operate within a broader global system of politics. We're influenced by what is happening in Russia, Ukraine, affecting issue, cooking oil. Yeah, it comes down to that. In terms of when we continue celebrating, even though we're looking at politics in Africa, is the world receptive to our ways of doing things, or are we still, one would say, you know, not converting, but subjected to world systems?
My response to that question will be that Africa doesn't exist in isolation. It is central to itself. It takes that as a point of departure in engaging with the rest of the world. It is central to itself, but also very central to the broader global politics. Of course, it cannot be easy because colonialism was or is a power structure. I've often heard about these arguments that said but colonization ended, but
the ripple effects.
Yes, but colonialism is still there because it is a power structure. So what happened is the mutation of colonialism into what we call, in my discipline, what we'll call global coloniality, whereby it operates in invisible ways. But maybe adding on to what Prof had said regarding the strides we are making, I also concur with him that we are making strides. I will speak about higher education, which I'm mostly familiar, which I'm a bit familiar with, and maybe from the universities, even westernized universities like Witwatersrand, where I studied myself, they are strides because even African languages have been made compulsory. Like a student registering for first year, it is compulsory that he does either isiZulu, Sesotho, or that those African languages. Of course, it cannot be a transformation that can happen overnight.
It's a start.
Yeah, but it is definitely getting somewhere.
It's interesting that this day is celebrated because of the formation of the African Union, and it has so much criticism. Are we a toothless continent when it comes to the politics of the world? When you talk of the G20s, are we recognized or
in
terms of politics, we do have an influence in what happens in the rest of the world. Namazatla is mediate.
We have influence as a united Africa. But what we're trying to do is to gain that leverage, not only in terms of politics, because socio-economic and politics, but we can only do that as a united Africa, defining, self-affirming ourselves, soul-searching kind of a project. That's what I kept saying.
It's Rise of Him Mid Mornings. I'm in conversation with Dr. Sfiso Ndlovu. You hear the politics lecturer at the University of Mpumalanga. I've also got in studio with me Miss Thulisile Buda, who's a, I've come to know you as a language activist before being a lecturer, and language keeps coming because I think it's one of those easily sold notions in the world over, and it's a struggle on its own. Ngikhalenge ukuthi nale nkulumo yethu le ngabe si haya nje sishaye ngesintu, but in households, how do we then change the mindset? Now buyele ekhaya, hey, uthuli lo uhlakaniphe isikhulu sikhipha ngamakhala.
Yiye.
How do we then, you know, it's one thing to decolonize education, decolonize institutions, mm-hmm. but emakhaya las puma khona.
Yes.
Na unga satisngisa, uga funds. Nje wena kutsi, usata upesu I PhD yako, ngesindebele, umntaza lo.
You know, Pumi, the thing is, there is something wrong with our households, ne? Because nati, we would prefer taking our children where they will learn only English and Afrikaans, you know. If there is no, if the school has to be even top standard, you know, you need to ask what is yearly evaluation of how students perform English, because you want your child to learn is cool. If you can go to a mall right now, Ilanga Mall, for example, umama, especially abo mama, abo ma, banekinga. Women are the problems because men speak indigenous languages with their children. Women would, emol, you can see good, these people are Swati speaking. Even the child is still struggling to learn English, but the mother is imposing this English, is forcing this English onto the child. The challenge now becomes good when they get to emakhaya, where there is strictly an indigenous language, you know, learned and spoken. Bayahluleka, they become isolated. You know, they're seeing even imbandana. What is imbandana? It's animals,
yes.
You know, domestic animals for the very first time. They're afraid of domestic animals. They cannot speak the language. But because they cannot communicate, right? I am Ndebele. So I know it's Ndebele, but my children do not get the privilege to understand it's Ndebele. That I know. We understand. And we want to make sure that our relatives understand that.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that our neighbors understand that our children, you know, grew up in suburbs and they speak English. But now you can never find, you know, Western people trying hard enough to speak our own languages. Alanje, we are all Africans, ngapa. But because of coloniality, Skuluma is kuwa. Speaking English so that we can attract broader audience. If there was one person who is white in a room of all African people who understand each other's languages, we will rather resort to English to accommodate this person. Only one person out of 50 indigenous language speakers, but sizokhuluma English to accommodate only one, because you see, that's the power they
the
have
language.
Over our languages.
Prof. Mahulu, we're going to be wrapping up our conversation shortly, but it's interesting for me to see statistics coming out in terms of literacy levels. Nabastatansa nalamanye mave, uve batibanva nabase Japan, gakrit, two, ba performa, jemba losa high school in Ngzim Africa. And yet, once upon a time, Zimbabwe was rated highly when it comes to the standard or the quality of education. What has set us back? One would think, you know, with democracy, with political liberation, nengondole zizetu zizokhlathululeka, marawa ngathi kuyabhala. Prof, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you, ma'am.
You've touched on strides in terms of how far we've come with research, and yet we still see very sad statistics. As we wrap it up, I know you're optimistic of our Africanness.
Yes.
How can we move forward as a continent in terms of education so that Nati will be rated amongst the best in the world?
Yes. I agree with you, ma'am, that there are still challenges in as far as our education is concerned. A number of international tests, for example, have shown that, for example, us in South Africa, our children do not perform to the same requisite level. And my response to that is, yes, that may be true, and that could have been as a result of the history that we have. But I think we are now moving in the right direction in terms of creating what we call epistemic access, because the manner in which our knowledge at school, my colleagues have talked about mathematics and so on, has been presented in the fashion that makes children believe that schooling belongs to Europe and it doesn't belong to us. But now there is this awareness that is taking place, most probably because of activities such as those that will be that are taking place on days like this one, which kind of take make our people aware that this kind of knowledge, which has been presented as if it's European, actually originates in Africa. So if we can develop understanding that we actually are the custodian of that language, and we as teachers at schools, at universities, have to find ways of linking very directly with the experiences of learners at home, so that when they come to university and school, they don't experience that as a transitioning of some kind. And one of the ways is using the languages that they've been using at home, their aspirations, their fears, their experiences from there should also be reflected in the curriculum. So my point is, it's not entirely children who have to be blamed when things don't go right, but we have to make it possible for them to succeed by making sure that the curriculum, what we teach, is relevant. And if they find interest and they find that the curriculum is interesting, you'll definitely see how better they perform, even in subjects like mathematics and whatever disciplines that you can think about, only if we can make it relevant. And for that to be speaking the same language is a speak at all.
Thank you so much for your time. That's Prof. Sechaba Mahlomaholo, Research Professor of Education at the University of Mpumalanga. All right, I'm coming to you, Dr. Suso. From what the Prof has said, now we're making it fashionable. We make it appealing to the current young people studying political studies. A lot has happened, even our hair. I'm looking around the room. We wear our hair differently. There's definitely a celebration of Africanness coming in. But when it comes to political studies, do we find that the young people studying, if you compare yourself when you were doing your undergrad, Nanyalo, having more opportunities, having more exposure, has that conversation and the debate that happens in the lecture room changed?
Speaking, as I said earlier on, myself, acknowledging that I am a product of these westernized universities. Mm. For instance, I myself did all my degrees at Wits University. I'm noticing a huge difference, and I'm very, very optimistic, because even the heightened consciousness of decolonizing students, curriculum also came from the students. If we can recall the period 2015, it was not only about fees must fall, but it was the students themselves clamoring for change, clamoring for decolonized education. It also came from the students, which to me was a confirmation that you cannot suppress an idea whose time has come. Students really expressed that they are tired of colonial education. They are tired of marginalization of Africa. They really want Africa to be taken as a departure point, as a legitimate epistemic site. So I believe as universities, and from what I'm noticing as I'm teaching at the University of Mpumalanga, which prides itself as an African university, even its mission statement, what I'm noticing is that students are very, very conscious. The production of knowledge is not from the teacher to the students. Yes, it is co-production of knowledge, but then it is up to us as teachers, as lecturers, to be conscious that we have a lot of relearning and learning to do.
Thank you so much for your time, ladies. That was Dr. Sifiso Ndlovu, political studies lecturer, and Sengivale Sanjalo ngoba nakunedzaba. We're running a little late for news. Thank you so much. You're on Rise FM Mid-Mornings. The show continues after this.
Celebrating Africa Day with Rise FM and the University of Mpumalanga, an African university leading in creating opportunities for sustainable development through innovation. Hashtag, I love my Africa.